Hello and welcome to Carr Maloney's COVID cast, where I, Matthew Berkowitz, and my colleague Brian O'Shea look at some legal issues that are trending and emerging in light of COVID-19, and especially as it relates to class actions. In our first COVID cast, Brian and I took a look at some of the lawsuits that we're seeing against retailers and grocers by consumers. Today, Brian and I are going to take a look at some of the lawsuits and risks and potential solutions as it relates to some of the lawsuits and potential lawsuits and class actions that are being filed or will be filed by employees against their employers. And this is a plan for that issue. I'm going to turn it over to Brian now.
I think it's important to keep in mind as we start seeing companies reopening, the potential issues that these companies, both so-called essential businesses and non-essential businesses, might be facing as the coronavirus continues to spread in many areas around the United States. How employers should prepare themselves to potentially mitigate future legal risks and potential lawsuits down the line. This includes providing employees with PPE, providing specific directions for how employees are supposed to act around each other in the workplace, how many employees should be in the office at once, and whether teleworking continues to be a viable option in the months ahead. These are all relevant things that employers need to be considering right now.
Brian, backing up, have you seen, some of the lawsuits, I know you've been looking at some of the lawsuits that have been filed against previously. What types of lawsuits are you seeing against indie employers right so far?
Well, I think the main thing that we're seeing right now is...
I know we've seen things against grocers and Amazon and some other things. What have you been seeing?
Well, Amazon in particular, allegations that companies like Amazon and Amazon itself are not taking proper precautions in the workplace, including, as I said, providing PPE, not providing enough testing, which is its own hot button issue at this point, and having too many workers around each other, for example, and just generally not taking adequate precautions. And then beyond that, we're also seeing lawsuits dealing with issues like increased hazard pay and failure to provide that in these dangerous conditions, as well as increased sick leave and leave for people who may or may not have coronavirus as well.
Right. And then obviously a lot of those same defenses that we talked last time about the consumers, I think the same legal defenses equally apply. We sparred a little bit about the breaches and the breach of duties and what duties might be owed and foreseeability. I think the same things apply. Maybe you disagree. I don't know.
No, I absolutely do agree. I think causation continues to be a really central defense to all of these claims. I think in the months and years ahead, it's going to be very difficult for employees, for any plaintiff, to show where exactly he or she got coronavirus from. And then also, as you were alluding to, if you're a company, what is your duty to prevent employees from getting sick? I mean, obviously, employees need to, take some steps themselves to protect themselves, and employers can't make employees protect themselves. But there's often very sophisticated equipment and technology involved in protecting people from viruses like this. And what is an employer supposed to do? That's a question that's still answered.
All right, I'll tell you one. Okay. All right, let's say, but, and again, and I think we talked about the standard of care. This is so new, novel coronavirus that is there a standard of care out there? And a lot of this is I guess the employer should be following, I think, CDC guidelines. So maybe that does become a standard. But let's say, what can employers do? You're talking about all the technology available. Taking the temperature of employees as they walk in the door. I guess you could do that, but obviously there's such a long incubation period. If you've been exposed, that something's not going to be picking up, that they may be asymptomatic. And number two, I think the other problem is you get into privacy issues with employees sticking a thermometer in your mouth or on their forehead. That I think it could spawn other issues. I understand that there's technology available, but it could be invasive to the part of employees.
I suppose it could be, but and yes, it might be somewhat invasive and might cause some complaints around the workplace. But the allegation. The allegations against employers and these future lawsuits that we're going to continue to see is, in my opinion, likely going to be that they did not take enough precautions and they were not aggressive enough in combating coronavirus in their workplace versus you invaded my privacy by being too aggressive with combating coronavirus. But I certainly both are possible. No question about that.
But I think that's, I think that's the problem, that the employee plaintiff is going to say you should have been more aggressive, and the employer is going to say I couldn't have been more aggressive. Had I been more aggressive, I'm invading my employee's rights. So I think it's a double-edged sword that I think moving forward, I think it becomes important for employers to be working with counsel to balance those rights, to protect the employees on across the broad spectrum. But then again, I want to raise the topic we talked about last week, the causation. I agree with you that it's going to be extremely, extremely difficult for employees to prove that they were exposed at the workplace, at this particular workplace. However, I still put out there, what if you do have an employee that says, you know what, I've not been anywhere else. I've only gone home to my apartment where I live with nobody else, and I come to work and that's it. I haven't been anywhere else. Does that get them over that causation?
It would certainly make a stronger case. Yes. I think there's always going to be gaps. I mean, I find it hard to believe that an employee can't, didn't go anywhere other than home and to work. I mean, people need to eat, and even possibly if you have your food delivered, you can catch coronavirus that way as well, because coronavirus can apparently survive on surfaces for some unknown period of time. So I think, yes, even in an extreme example, I think there's still arguments there about causation or regarding causation. Even in a large apartment building, say the employee lives in a large apartment building with multiple people. Things, like the air vent, the air conditioning. We believe this virus spreads through the air. There's a multitude of different ways that an employee can catch coronavirus without coming into contact with anyone. That's as we currently believe.
And I think that we've been, as you start getting into the differences, and certain distinctions. I think I've been reading into some of the defenses for the class actions and the commonality. And are the claims truly common? Are these folks being exposed allegedly based upon the same breach or same violation or same exact failure by the employer? So I think we're going to see the class actions, but I think there may be difficulty establishing the elements under Rule 23 for a class action because are the claims truly common? I think to some extent, I think courts may be willing to find commonality, but I think it gets trickier for plaintiffs when you start getting to the causation issue, and it creates certification issues with respect to damages and predominant.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it might come down to who the plaintiffs are suing. If you have a bunch of plaintiffs who join in a class and they all work together in the same warehouse where they allege they got coronavirus, I mean, I think that's going to be easier than a bunch of employees who work in a different type of company in different offices, say in different states across the country. I think those folks are going to have a much more difficult case than, say, a class of people who all work together at the same location.
I tend to agree, and then still, you obviously have issues on damages because everybody, the class members, are going to be affected differently, differently by their exposure. Some may be a little sick, some may have grave injuries, or may face death, and then I think then what you wind up is, we talked about it last time. Is that you have these individual, it requires individual inquiries, which may weigh against certification. Certainly some districts and circuits will bifurcate the case and certify the common question, but then bifurcate the case for damages. And we've got one minute left. Any just final thoughts you have wrapping up on this topic, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I think, It's important to talk about these defenses and their likelihood of success. But I think one thing to keep in mind is that as this continues to unfold, that even Article III judges with lifetime tenure might feel a significant amount of public or political pressure to certify these class actions, especially against certain larger companies. In this day and age. So I think that even beyond the legal defenses, the different social and political considerations are important to keep in mind as well. If you're an attorney or a business leader who is considering how to defend a lawsuit like this.
Okay, great. Thanks, Brian. I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we look forward to sharing with you next time.